get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we get a chance to talk a little short game and spend some time with Eddie Pels of Pels Golf. So stay tuned to get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along. This hour, we wanted to talk about some putting. We want to talk about some PGA Tour news. And we wanted to talk about what you can do to get your own green in your own backyard or inside or whatever you're doing. And we turned to a guy who knows a lot about all three of those things. He is the legacy. He is the man that now carries the Pels shingle. Not that Dave Pels, he wasn't carrying it when Dave was with us, but we've lost the great Dave Pels a while back, and Eddie Pels is carrying on the name, he's carrying on the business, and he's expanding things, and we've known Eddie for a long time, and we always appreciate him making time, and he's making it this hour. So, Eddie, thanks for coming on the show. Great to talk to you. Great to see you in Orlando, and thanks for making time now.
Keith, it's always great to be with you. I've heard you talk to my dad for so many years, and with Dad's passing, I know more than anybody how big a shoes he wore in the golf industry, and I'm just trying to do what I can in my way to keep the legacy alive and just honor everything he did before me. He was such an incredible person in golf and a true golf nut, stem to stern, all day long, all year long. And so, yeah, we're doing some neat projects continuing on what he kind of showed us could be done.
Well, let's start there because I'm glad you brought it up, and because your dad is true legend, and he was always a great guest on this show so many times over the years because he always coming out with a new book or always coming out with new projects or doing television work or whatever. And it's interesting in talking with him because you probably didn't hear everything, but he always – you were his number one, the little Eddie that walked around with him when you were just a tyke, you know, to a grown man and then having your own family and such. Is just an amazing story that way, the lineage and the legacy. And your dad kind of carved out this uniqueness of the 100-yard shot, 100 yards and in, you know, and developed schools and still you still have the schools and, you know, they teach golfers. Really, the scoring game, as the great Dave Pels always called it, and that's exactly right because the driver is overrated. Now, I know people are like, oh, but I love my driver. I can't hit it very well, but I love my driver.
Yeah.
Well, that's the one you should keep in the bag. And as our buddy Dave always talked about, you know, that was the importance of that. And even Bob Toski, who's still around with us and a regular contributor, talks about teaching the game from the green back to the tee. You know, learn how to stroke the ball with the putter first. Learn how to use the wedges. Learn how to chip and pitch and et cetera, like that kind of thing. And, you know, your dad really, I don't see anybody continue to fill that space. So, I mean, you know, I'm sure there are teachers that teach it, but not the way your dad did. Thus, you now teach it as well.
Right. He had a way of getting you as enthused about sticking a nice 64-yard wedge shot with the same energy and like enthusiasm as you do hit a good drive with and the feeling you get from that. So, you know, we do want people to drive well. We want them to drive long and straight as you know, as good as they can hit it. And of course the modern game is stretching that out, you know, further and further, but you're going to have to control your wedges and sticking a wedge shot to a foot is a great feeling in golf. And that's what we're trying to really help golfers with. And then the rest of it, get it in the hole, you know, get it in the hole consistently. And yeah, I was a kid when Dave was working with the first batch of tour players and he always let the data lead him to what he considered the truth in golf, which, you know, he was shot link before shot link. They called him the man in the trench coat because he was out there taking data in the rain of these players. And then it led him to the short game. The data led him to what he ended up teaching. And, you know, kite was the first player who embraced the 60-degree wedge and then won the Tour Money title without winning a tournament because he couldn't close, but he was incredible. You know, he got to where he was birdieing three out of every four par fives, and his up and down percentage before they were keeping a scrambling percentage and shot length was, my dad tracked it at 85%. Now the tour record is 73% by Greg Norman. And I've got a few players that are kind of eyeing for that number now. But before shot length, Kite, we think, had a year where he was 85% up and down in tournament play. Now, that's amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's just, it gives you goosebumps and wants you to get motivated to work on your wedges and, you know, make the game more enjoyable for a lifetime after, because it's not as hard. It's easier to get your wedges sharp and your putting than it is to hit a 300-yard drive down the middle.
Well, I tell you, I played with some elderly gentlemen over years, and to watch them, so they would play from the forward tee, well, you know, the whites instead of the blacks or the blues, something reasonable. But inside even 150, these guys, I mean, they would score like crazy. You see, they're going like, well, this guy can barely bend over to pick the ball out of the hole, but he is eagle eye.
And that's a fun way to play the game, you know. It's fun not to struggle with the short game. So we're building, you know, my dad built a backyard that no one else could conceive of, and he did conceive of it, and then I helped him build it, and it's been a dream come true. And we've gotten so much enjoyment out of that backyard. We're trying to propel the golf industry into more short game practice areas that are user-friendly and easy to do and experience and fun. And we think there is that fun hook that's going to get people to do it. Because right now, you're not set up to practice the short game efficiently. You know, it takes a little work and a little effort. And we can build some facilities where it becomes an easier thing to experience. So I'm currently on a project in Reading, Pennsylvania, for Swing Evolutions of Reading, Pennsylvania. And they've got a 20-bay simulator business. There's 3 feet of snow on the ground everywhere here, and there's golfers just has tee times coming in and playing simulator golf, nice, comfortable chairs, but it's like they're playing an 18 holes of golf indoors. And he's building an extension of next door, an 18-hole putting course that is going in right now as we speak. And so we're turfing that and about finished. We got one more day here, and it'll be a really fun experience, again, indoors. And it's growing the game. I mean, this is how people – it's real putting. I mean, you got to – you know, it's not putt-putt, but it's a putting course designed by Paul Jansen and Himalayas Golf for Swing Evolutions of Reading, Pennsylvania. So I'm starting to work with Paul Jansen and Himalayas Golf on bigger and bigger projects that we kind of laid the groundwork for 15 years ago by doing the backyard. And of course, you know, there's the rest of the golf business is moving and shaking too and doing great things. And, you know, from driving ranges to friendlier putting courses and simulators, it's all great for the game. And growing the game.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm familiar with the PGA Tour Superstore and having their, simulators in there, and that's, I think that's Foresight. Yeah. And you know, there's some amazing companies doing some amazing stuff, but they're usually booked up like months in advance. Now obviously we're in the winter months still, so in the Northeast the last couple of weeks, I should say, the whole US of A except for Hawaii has been under some sort of storm situation, and my friends in Florida are none too happy. I'm like, it's not so much Florida anymore, is it? Uh-huh. You're going to enjoy those Junes going forward on that. But it is amazing because golf is a year-round sport. And it from the standpoint of even if you are a recreational player, you need to keep your swing honed. You need to do certain things to keep your game up to when you get out into the fresh air finally on the course, it's there for you.
Yeah. Right. And you know how we age. I mean, I'm getting up there in years, and then you are too, frankly. And, when I don't stretch for a long time, I need to stretch again to get back my flexibility, and golf swing is no different. I mean, use it or lose it type stuff. And the simulators and driving ranges and Top Golf, all of it is helping people stay in touch with their golf game through the year. And then, I love how amateur golfers are consistent in their mistakes, And so these simulators can help you with your club path, and if you're whipping it inside or you're lagging behind, whatever your particular problems are, the simulators, the technology is really beneficial. And so, I love how initially they have technology, they don't know what to do with it, and then over time people figure it out and they get more user-friendly with it. So it's all coming together in a really neat way for golfers.
Yeah, yeah, Flight Scope, and you have all these other type of technology-based products that are available, so you can see ball flight, you can see ball speed. Some of the stuff translate for some people, sometimes it doesn't, but certainly
right.
If you have a situation where you can at least track the ball. You go to a driving range. I mean, I love to go to driving ranges and just watch people. That is the greatest thing. You see some really, really bad swings, but you gather a lot of information by doing that. But you have no idea. When you hit a ball, it looks like you hit the ball 275 yards, and it really only went 225. You can't tell that.
Yeah, And, people are quirky, and their golf games are quirky. We're all different shapes and sizes, but it's about hitting that ball flush, whatever you got to do to get through the hitting zone, solidly. And you'd be surprised at some of the swings at what good results they produce. So it's a great game. It challenges us, throughout our lifetime. You never conquer golf. We're working with tour players that never conquer the game, and they're always insecure about this or that or the other. And yet there are pathways to kind of get it together, produce the best you can produce, and enjoy the game.
Yeah, and that's what your dad was all about. And as we're talking to Eddie Pels, son of Dave Pels, who's left us, but he was truly a rocket scientist, and we always talked about him being the 30-year overnight success story. So,
He wrote seven books. Listen, he's just been preaching the short game, and he's always been 15 years ahead of the industry with his thinking. So we built the backyard 15 years ago, and it's really kind of kicking into gear now what it meant. But, he just always thought about golf, and he was such a joy for me to work with as a product engineer for him. But then as his son, I saw his passion and his devotion to golfers was unprecedented and unrelenting even. And there were times when I went to work for him, I told my wife, I said, I know he's a workaholic, and I'm going to, get swept into his workaholism, but it's golf, and it was working on golf and going to wonderful places, meeting wonderful people, but it was a workaholic mentality.
No question. I like you said, it's golf. And that's Eddie Pels, our guest this hour. We'll be back after this break. Pleasure to spend the hour with Eddie Pels. He is the heir apparent to the Pels Golf School establishment and doing so much more. This hour, we're going to talk about all these other projects that Eddie's working on. But you mentioned Reading, Pennsylvania. Know it a little bit. Reading Country Club right there. And it's really, really, you wouldn't think of it as a big golf area, but actually there are a lot of golfers in that area. So the fact that you have Swing Evolutions is the name of the place that's building this fantastic facility. And I think back to Dr. Greg Rose, who started Titleist Performance Institute with Dave Phillips. And prior to that, he had Advantage Golf. But in between, he had something called Club Golf. And it was the first golf-based gym and practice area place that I'd ever been around. And it was great, but he was restricted. The place was, you know, was only so many square feet, and that caused a situational positioning problem over time. But it was a very interesting concept early on to think that could be done, and now obviously it looks like it's being built out even bigger in Reading.
Yeah, we're doing an 8,000-square-foot indoor putting course alongside a 25-bay simulator current footprint. So I'm encouraging to do like an Augusta watch party. I mean, once the majors start, and I mean, how fun would it be to just enjoy the social aspect of tournament golf on a putting course indoors? You know, it's a beautiful kind of evolution of the game. You know, we still teach our short game schools, the Dave Pell Scoring Game Schools, at www.pellsgolf.com. You can always find our schedule there. And we've got, I think our least tenured instructor is 25 years with us. So we've got experienced instructors that know how to talk short game and explain it to you and then break it down, address your weakest point, and solve those problems, and then let you get on to your next problem in golf, which there's always something. But, you know, you'd like to progress past some and into others and keep it going. And that's the fun of the game and the challenge. And what a great sport. I mean, outdoors, good exercise, great, you know, walking around. We just love everything about it. So I've played college basketball myself, and you know, there's nothing. I'm not playing college. I'm not playing competitive basketball anymore. I'm golfing, and I'm doing the nice things in life that aren't wrecking my body, you know, prematurely. So it's a wonderful sport for kids to get into for a lifetime. So men, women, elderly, and young, it's for all of us.
Well, you know, and that's where the game is at right now. Professionally, this claim is that viewership is up, but I don't know of a lot of people watching it. Of course, you watch the nonsense going on at the Waste Management in Phoenix, a tournament formerly known as the Phoenix Open, because it's all about not the golf, which is a kind of criminal in itself. But there's a reason I tell people that golf is a four-letter word. You know, it's just... But it keeps you coming back, right? It just does, and it's one of those things.
It is
a great sport.
It's those great shots. Everybody, every once in a while, you stripe one right down the middle, or you draw it perfectly, or whatever your trajectory is, or it's a short game shot that just keeps you coming back because, man, that was good.
Yeah, it's my I am old, around long enough. This show's been around long enough to have had the late great Ely Callaway on as well, and he had come out with, you know, another one of his big monstrosities of a driver, and was trying to, you know, he was a great marketer, right? So I just need to get golfers to hit one good shot around. Oh, Mr. Callaway, I need more than one. Oh, no, Keith, just one around. Like, come on, Mr. Callaway, just one. But that's what he lived and he breathed and he pushed out, and he still has his name on a company that you know, is up and down and all around. But, you know, when you're publicly traded, this is what you get into. But, you know, I just wonder what he would think of our industry now, because it's pretty insane. But it's great that those mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and on down the line, grandmas and grandpas, whatever you call them, Nana or Papa or what have you, are out there playing. And it's a family thing, and that's why it's great to have this guest on this hour. He is like family. I've known him for a long, long time and knew his dad very well. Dave Pels is always a top-notch human being, if nothing else. But Eddie Pels is with us this hour. Going to head to our bottom of the hour break, and when we come back, we've got to talk about the players that Eddie's working with on tour and so much more after this break.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee. What am I giving the driver? He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter. The Lama. Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga Gunga Galunga.
We're back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with Eddie Pels. He is the head man, CEO, chief bottle washer. Latest coming of the rocket scientist and such, Pels Golf, and still have the scoring short game schools. I'm telling you, I haven't been to one in a long time, but was always a lot of fun, especially when there's a Pels involved with that. But so many inventions as well. This is something else that I think that gets passed by for your dad's credit, the bunker board and some of these inventions. So you said they're going, this makes all the sense in the world, but how does a brain come up with this?
Right. Well, I had firsthand experience of that. When I first started working for him, he would come home from trips and he'd give me five ideas and then he'd go away for, 3 weeks. And he'd come back, and I'd have two of them developed, and one of them started, and two of them I hadn't even messed with yet. But then he'd have five more ideas, and it was just the cycle of, inventive thought that I had to try to keep up with. And, we ended up with, I think there's over 23 patents in the game of golf with Dave Pels' name on it. Everything from a putting track to putting clips, little attachments to the putter face, or the truth board. We made a 3 foot straight putt, with a smaller with hole reducers on it once, and sold that product for years. We patented an underlayment for a backyard green process where you can, you put it underneath the turf. So up until then, the way to stop shots with artificial grass was to do your contouring, lay the turf over the contouring, and then basically fill the green with as much sand as it would take to stop the ball when it would hit. And those sand filled greens are hard to maintain. The water washes out in a torrential rain and stuff. And so we put it underneath the turf. We put an inch layer of called a shot stopper underlayment. It's a special technique. And that's what we did in his backyard. And it's 15 years later and the shots are receiving like they did 15 years ago on the first shot, and we've never added sand to the top or done much of anything but blow off the greens for 15 years. So, one of our reasons for building the backyard was to show what can be built. The other was to prove to ourselves, would it last? You don't know right away. You build this amazing thing you think's pretty amazing, and then you live there for 15 years through Texas summers and occasional ice storm and winter, and here we are 15 years later, and it has held up. So, that's very, I'm proud of that part of it, and I'm proud of everything, Dad invented of course, along the way too, and all the help I could give him to do that stuff. It was special, and I've had a blessed life in that regard, and been able to work with my father and get along with through all the challenges in business and any work relationship. You know, it's always not all fun, but man, did we have a lot of fun. We really did, and we could argue and discuss, but we were always father son in the end, and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, well, that was great, really, really meaningful to him, and I know you know a little bit about that. But you know, even off air, your dad and I had conversations about your impact and the meaning for you being involved with the family business, so to speak, as we'll call it. That just meant so much to him. Well, what a big teddy bear. Your dad was always so gracious, and I realized that he and I had developed a relationship over the years, but he didn't have to be like that from the standpoint of he was always willing to come on the show or wanting to come on the show and talk about whatever it was. He didn't have to have a book out or a reason to come on the show other than he was preaching the gospel of the short game, which we all should listen to.
Yeah. Well, and a beautiful thing I didn't even tell you about when we talked earlier is my son came with me on this trip and is part of the crew here and on his first installation job. And so, you know, we're rooming together just like Dad and I did for all those years through all the travel. So it's a really special time.
Well, there's no question about that, and especially have you on the show because of the great things that, you know, it's hard to carry on a legacy like your dad created. And it's one thing to have the name on the door, but you know, it's what we see, what the kids and the grandkids do with the company along the way. And that's, you know, important that way. One of the things I wanted to mention, and this is now 46 years, going on 46 years since this invention, back in 1980, since we're talking about patents for your dad, Dave Pelz invented and built the first 60-degree wedge, and he gave it to Tom Kite. That is actually something I don't remember ever knowing about. At the time, the highest loft was 55 degrees for a sand wedge, and Tom Kite does credit Dave for the most improved player and other awards that he got. And, of course, the title, the money-winning title is big. He won Tom Kite was a leading money winner in 1981. And thus the short game was changed forever. And I think that's, again, that's just something else people take for granted. They don't really realize where these things come from. They just now know that I have a 60-degree wedge in my bag. Why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
Although I have to take it one step further, and I have a Pelz 64-degree wedge that sometimes will sneak in if I'm playing an executive course or something like that. 64 degrees.
Well, we still believe in the 64 as an amazing weapon in the game. It takes some learning, and just like the 60-degree, you got to make a good wedge swing. But it started with Dave would compete with the tour players, and he had a 60-degree and they didn't, and he'd just whoop them. He would just whoop them in these little short game challenges he would come up with. And so they would take his wedge. You know, he'd end up like, oh, Kite took that one, and Tom Jenkins took that one, and Alan Miller took that one, and Jim Simons took this one. And every time he'd make himself a 60-degree wedge and compete with the guys, they'd end up leaving with it. And that's really how the 60-degree got into the game, which is, you know, just another just really fun part of it.
Yeah,
the whole history of the game.
And, you know, and now we got variations of 58 degrees. People are always tweaking and different things like that. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah.
The other thing that kind of gets lost is your dad invented and patented the two-ball putter. And this was the white hot that Callaway sold, I don't know, millions and millions of those. So,
well, it's a classic story because he patented a three-ball putter, and then he had a wide face and a small face, and he had USGA issues with almost every putter he's ever invented. He's got seven putters on the non-conforming list with the USGA to this day. And but with like 4 years left on the patent, Callaway, one of in the drawings of the patent work, he had a two ball version, and he had a four ball version, and even a like an eight ball version, because he was, you know, always took it to the extremes. But the point was, you couldn't misalign these putters. I mean, it's easy to line a third ball up, the real ball you're putting, with two other balls. It's visually easy to see that alignment. And so with 3 or 4 years left, Callaway came and said, we want to license your patent. He said, well, there's only 3 years left on it and, you know, whatever. And so they negotiated, and instead of getting a per putter royalty, he got a one-time fee, which he shared with some shared with investors that he had had back then. And so that the Callaway Odyssey is the best-selling putter in the game of golf. It's the best-selling club in the game of golf. So it's millions and millions of putters they've sold under the two-ball banner. So he really should have gotten a per-piece royalty, but he didn't. And then that's part of the story.
Yeah, well, you know, but monetarily not so good for everybody involved, but that doesn't surprise me. Is, you know, Dad was always giving, so you know that somehow kind of equates into it. Of course, you know,
it didn't
help your college
right.
tuition. However,
no, I had to get a basketball scholarship and do a paper out and all the That's all right. I mean, listen, we're not the only ones who were early inventors that, you know, then the business takes over from them. But we've done great. Dad did great. You know, when he went from manufacturing and learning aids even to teaching, then the learning aids helped the teaching, and the teaching helped the learning aids. But we weren't manufacturing sets of clubs, Featherlite golf clubs and all the clubs before that. The manufacturing business is a tough business. The instruction business was a great business. And then the learning aids, I could complement them with supporting it, the teaching with those. And it really was a dynamic, busy time for many years there. And then the tour players, you know, we've had great relationships with elite level tour players, that from Phil Mickelson, who really, you know, didn't want any help on his putting, but he wanted to talk about wedges with Dave. And then of course it led into wedges. And then what did they have? I don't know, 20 some year working relationship. And, you know, all Phil's majors, we would go on advanced trips to majors. So with the idea of, you don't want to be surprised. And he'd say, well, I've played Augusta, you know, 100 rounds there. And Dave would say, go with me an advanced trip, and I'll show you a whole new way to approach it. And, of course, they did that, and he wins, like, the next year. I mean, Dave's timing was amazing, and his timing with players we could write a book about for sure, because, you know, it clicked often with players, and not only the big names, Phil Mickelson, Patrick Reed, but Jesper Parnevik and Mike Weir and guys he didn't work with, like, on and off a lot, but had some good, like, moments with, and then they won their majors with, because Lee Jansen was another one. I mean, it was amazing to watch, and I would just stand in awe and be supportive in any way I could be. And now, you know, now I've been with Patrick Reed for the last 3 years to Augusta in an advanced trip and then during the tournament, and he's finished tied for fourth, tied for 12th, and then third alone the last three Augustas. So, you know, I want to say here and now, we got our eyes on Augusta this year. I'm excited, isn't doing it enough credit. I can wait. Barely.
I get a chance to see my buddy Eddie Pals at least twice this year. I think it's going to feel like it's going to be more than that as we go forward. But I will look forward to seeing you in Augusta. And Patrick is back on the PGA Tour. which is big news. And also, you've been, like you said, you've been working with him. I did see you out at last year's Live event at Trump, and that was great to spend some time with you. But yeah, Patrick's an interesting guy. He's quite polarizing, but it'd be really nice. You could tell by his responses about coming back to the tour that not only did he miss it, he just feels he doesn't feel complete. There's some things, like you said, like Augusta. Now, for him to put on the green jacket at any point in his career would be beyond fantastic. But there's a guy that could certainly do it.
Well, he won in 2018, and so he's there, forever. And he's playing good. Listen, he is a working man's golfer. And I know, there's this and that stories with him, but I love the guy, and I respect him. And you talk about a workaholic in the game. I mean, he's a working man. He puts in 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, and it shows. But it's, it's not just doing that. He's a smart guy. He's got a lot of insights, a lot of feel in those hands, and a lot of experience. So, golfers come in all shapes and sizes, and he's not your physical specimen that's going to awe anybody. But you put a club in his hand, and he's ready to go. He's got an attitude that is going to say, "I'm here to compete." And it's amazing to kind of be a part of it and stay with the family. And those are special times, too. It's just, you just get to see the whole life of a tour player. It's not just the tournament play. It's what goes in between visits and, how dedicated are they and how smart are they working on the right things. And you can put a lot of effort in the wrong area and you don't get very far. But it's about navigating that challenge of, where am I going off track and where am I not? So, and sometimes it takes some separate eyes to kind of care about you, and through good times and tough, when you come off the course pissed off, you got to stand there and take the heat for what you advised them to do or didn't advise them to do. You're part of the team. So it's an amazing and special relationship. He visited my dad like a month before his passing, and that was great. Yeah.
Yeah, and thanks to Eddie for clearing up the a second green jacket would put Patrick on a different level.
That's what our focus is now. Steely-eyed focus.
That's where I was going with that. That's next level stuff. Winning once is one thing, but winning more than once is a whole another level. And that's Patrick Reed's mission. And we'll look forward to seeing Eddie and Patrick in Augusta. We're excited. I'm glad to hear Eddie be excited about that. We are excited as well to be on the grounds of Augusta National in April. We'll be back to wrap up the show. It has indeed been a pleasure to spend time with a really good guy. And it's the apple in the tree thing, folks. Here, I mean, Dave Pelz was a top-notch human being, and the apple to that tree is Eddie Pelz, our guest of this hour, and top-notch individual as well. And a guy who is, people always say, "Oh, this person is taking over," that for their parent or what have you. But there are other people that do that and have much more skin in the game than people realize. And you're one of those people. Now, I know your dad always loved traveling with you and have you go with him. And there's some great pictures, even on the Pelz Golf website, of you out there, and your dad had the balls rolling down the ramp and, you know, and those kind of things.
So
those
are... Yeah.
You know,
listen, I grew up in Beltsville, Maryland. I grew up in Calverton, in your area, you know, all around there. That's where my roots are. My friends in my young life are still there and around there, Virginia area, and I love that area, coming back and seeing them, those people. But yeah, he ended up moving to Texas because once you're really in the golf business, he needed a good climate, like golfer climate, more year round. So Texas seems central to him, to East and West Coast, and then I played junior college basketball at Kilgore Junior College. Then I went to Texas. When I realized I wasn't going to be a basketball phenom, I went and got an engineering degree from University of Texas, and then went and caddied a year on the LPGA Tour for Chris Cheddar.
Mm.
Before I went to work with my father in 92, I caddied for Chris Cheddar, and then I caddied three tournaments for D.A. Weibring on the men's tour, and then I went to work for Dave Fells, and, you know, still do, Dave Fells Golf. And so it was a great chance to see inside the ropes again from a caddy's perspective what a tour player goes through. And I always liked, you know, if I was going to take over the family business, so to speak, I was going to do it from the ground up. I wanted to do every job that you'd ask anyone else to do. And I did have done that. And now, you know, we're really trying to take some of the good ideas and keep going with them, because we don't want them to die on the vine or fizzle out, because they're too good. And so I'm very humble about it, because I know I can never fill my dad's shoes, but I can do good work in the game, and you know, and it's a wonderful life to lead. And you know, golfers are friendly, they're social, they care about each other, they care about their own game more than they care about your game, but that's the nature of people. And you know, so being a part of the game of golf with all these wonderful people around me is just it's fun to help them kind of get to a new level in the game. My son, the people I work with, the projects we're working on, trying to just make it friendlier for golfers to learn this great game and become lifelong golfers.
Yeah, our game is tremendous, and I have enjoyed doing this show for so long and meeting great people along the way. And of course I meet you because of your dad, and your dad was,
yeah,
I mean, he's still one of the top 10 biggest instructors ever, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Create a whole segment in the game for short game. People are short game. What that's all,
right.
You know, it is just, it is just amazing and such. And kudos to you, because I know the sweat, and I love KT, but being on her bag, I'm sure that was really, really a learning experience for you.
Oh, she is a beautiful person, and I still stay in touch with her. Chris Cheddar is one of my all-time favorite golf women and golfers. Grew up a ballerina, and her hip would occasionally slip out of socket or whatever. But, you know, the LPGA I'm a huge fan of. I am a fan of all golf, but I love the European Tour. I love all the tours that are going at it. I just think there's a lot of stress on these competitive golfers, and it looks like a great, easy life. But let me tell you, you know, when the pressure's on to earn your paycheck and the pressure's on that putt, it's nerve-wracking, and it's very stressful on golfers and their families.
Well, as usual, you are an excellent guest. Eddie Pels, my guest on Tee with Keith Jones. We're just out of time. Get out there and practice your game. Do the short game. David wants you to. Practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.